Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
We are recording.
Recording, everybody. Hello, hello.
What up, what up?
Welcome to Three Black People in a Rose.
Yes. Today, we're going to spill the tea on what we're watching on TV, talk pop culture, all kinds of good stuff. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And today, we have a very special honored guest. We are so excited, guys. He is a New York Times bestselling author and a cultural critic and journalist who writes about all things pop culture, politics, race, sexuality, religion, race, class, gender, and has been published everywhere from Rolling Stone magazine to New York Times. He is also the author of three must-read essay collections, and I'm going to talk about all of them right now. The first, New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus, Love, Sex, Family, Race, and Other Reasons I've Put My Faith in Beyonce, a collection of essays exploring his early life as a young Black gay man growing up in a religious household in the South. His second book, I Don't Want to Die Poor, explores the impact of college loans, the financial and emotional turmoil, and cost of chasing your dreams. And his latest book, I Finally Bought Some Jordans, explores the struggle of being a Black creative, finding success in publishing and entertainment, the consequences of being an outspoken gay cultural critic, and ruminations on that wretched pandemic and dealing with grief as a grown adult. It is an honor to chop it up with him today about all the things and also learn what he's currently watching on TV or reading. Please welcome to the show, Michael Arsenault.
Oh, thank you so much. That was such a generous intro. I really appreciate that. I'm very happy to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
Yes. Okay, so we have some warm-up questions for you, Michael.
Just so.
Who is your childhood crush? Was your childhood crush?
I had a few. Will Smith probably was my first introduction to like, okay, this is it for you. I do, and not to end up in that Twitter thread, because that's not usually the lane I go, but I did mention my first book that Ryan Philippe.
And
particularly his Ass and Cruel Intentions had a profound impact on my life and figuring out.
Yeah.
And last, Omar Lopez, who was a background dancer for Janet Jackson, the guy from the If video, and That's the Way Love Goes. Very specific, but yes.
Yeah.
I'm a big Janet stan, so I remember some of the dancers' names and all that, yes.
Wow.
Oh my God, that's impressive.
That was my early childhood trinity, yes.
Yeah, that's a good, I feel like a lot of people knew if they were gay or straight via music video.
Any
pop culture icon. It that was either sense. The background dancer or the main person. And you're like, oh, I'm straight.
Even daycare was a little popping for me, but definitely the celebrity entree. Yeah, the Fresh Prince, I'm always grateful.
Oh my God, amazing. That's funny. What Real Housewives moment lives in your head rent-free?
Oh, wow, that is great. I was going to go with Not Today, Nick, Not Today's, but no. What NeNe did to white refrigerators.
I was shocked, honey. I was in tears almost. And it has a white refrigerator. I was like, oh, not a white refrigerator, girl.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. We talk about that all the time.
To real estate.
Yeah.
To the industry.
I have to give that to NeNe, yes. Yeah. That's what comes to mind.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. What celebrity are you low-key always checking in on? Like, you maybe not follow them, but you just look and see what they're doing?
Oh, well, you know, I did a recent unfollow with a female rapper that I formerly very much enjoyed, But yeah. as someone dealing with the recent loss of my mom, after that foot thing, I'm like, I'm good. But I did casually check because someone told me to look at something. So I did that. So maybe that
okay.
one.
Oh, okay.
I need space right now.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
Yeah, I can't be in Gag fair. City right now. I'm okay.
I understand mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. That also all seems to be her. She doesn't seem to give the password over, you know? Oh, wow.
Anyway. You mean her on?
Her. It's her. like, it's her tweeting. Phone. It's her Instagram. It's her on her phone. It's crazy.
That's nuts.
What is, and we'll go into the girl what you watching part, what is one thing you've been reading or watching lately that you want to inform the audience about?
You know what? This is actually it's not shade because I watched the first season. This is not normally the show I would recommend, but I actually want more people to watch it. Summer House, what is it? Martha's Vineyard with the Blacks.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Because, and I know I went to Howard, but like, I'm not a brunch Black per se. And I'm saying everybody on the show is. However, it's more, when I think, like, you know, I saw, because this is already starting off wrong, but.
No.
Michael, stop. I've seated you at brunch.
Well, you definitely saw me at brunch, but it wasn't given like brunch boot and elite. You know, like the Martha's Vineyard of it all. Like I saw the
Yeah.
I saw the, again, I'm country, so I would just say Stadiddy. So like, that's what I mean. I go to brunch though. I did. I like the Martha's Vineyard. I get it. I really do get it. The appreciate the history, yada, yada. But that wasn't even really my thing. I saw the Inkwell. Mm-hmm. It was cute, but I didn't care. But I never watched a white Summer House, but I really find that show refreshing in that I do want to see us in that environment be drunk and act a mess on Bravo. Good for us.
Yes. Yes.
Amir is amazing to look at, and I really want to thank all of the camera people for zooming in where it counts and making me so happy. Thank you to Amir for knowing his audience and selling the show.
Yeah.
And to my Stadiddy critique, I really do appreciate Preston interjecting kind of like that Black excellent like critique. So I think it's necessary. So it's a little bit of a balance. And honestly, that finale, the premiere, excuse me, was really interesting. It was really good.
You thought it was interesting and good.
Yeah, I thought it was actually a great opener.
You did?
They set it off. Oh, did you not?
Nope.
Oh, you didn't see it.
No.
Maybe because I watched it with friends. Would you?
Okay. Okay. I really, first of all, I just think we need some diversity when it comes to the women's attitudes and looks and like mindset.
That's a fair critique because didn't they run off somebody that looked absolutely different?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
They ran her
Mariah.
Off,
but... Yes. Mm-hmm. They ran her off for fighting the other girl who had the dog clothes in the washing machine.
Oh, God.
So I can't. So I'd love for that. And then Natasha and I have said before, there's no single guys. There's just this
Amir
one guy.
Amir has a girlfriend now.
Amir
has
a
so
girlfriend.
Disappointing.
That's fair. They do need a single man. But I like the premiere. And I feel like, because people judge the ratings. I'm like, y'all can't go by Lavda anymore.
No.
They didn't already told you.
No.
I feel like, because the Blacks have found Peacock. I'm assuming their number's a lot better on Peacock. But I want that show to exist. And by season three, I'm assuming by the end of the season, some of them might not still be in relationships.
Wait, I just got sent the other day the casting for like a Martha's Vineyard show. So I feel like they're...
A different
like,
show?
I don't know if it's a different show. It seems like it's the same one. I don't know why that wouldn't be the same one.
Well, they probably would switch that up
But
eventually.
I think they're switching
that
Because
that's what they do, right? Don't they do that with the summer houses? Mm-hmm.
They do, yeah. It takes them a while. I mean, they kind of hit it out the park with the first Summer House, or the Summer House Hamptons, but... They do a lot of shuffling with the cast because it takes them a while to kind of really gel. It took them a while to find some good guys. Mm-hmm. They always have a plethora of women, but it's hard for them to find guys to cast. So I think they're going to struggle a little bit with Martha's Vineyard, but they'll hopefully eventually get there.
Mm-hmm. Noelle is a great addition in my opinion.
She is. I love her. She seems like a young, I was telling Justine, she's like a young Real Housewife in training. That's what she
is. Yes, she is. And she's like Lotto, but she just crossed AKA because she's very excited.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, she is. Yeah.
And I like that. That's actually the perfect balance for me. That brings in people like me to watch more of that. And again, Amir.
Thank you, Amir. Yes. Thank you, Amir. Oh my God. Amazing. So, Michael, as a cultural critic and writer, we have some pop culture items we want to just pick your brain about.
Mm-hmm.
Diddy, Beyonce, Cowboy Carter, and a little bit of Potomac. We're going to reserve those thoughts, guys, for our pre-show. If you want to listen to this episode ad-free with our pre-show, join the Rose Garden over at Patreon. Patreon.com/twoblackgirlsonerose. You can watch us all on video. You can hear Michael's thoughts on Diddy and all the things. You can watch us on Two Black Girls Watch. And you can try out a Patreon membership with a 7-day free trial. Shout out to the Rose Garden. We love you. So we want to shift gears a little bit. We've been reading your new book. I finally bought some Jordans.
Thank you.
You dedicated your book to your late mother and also to millennials struggling with aging. When I read that, I marinated on that for like a solid 2 minutes on that page, just looking at them four low lines. I felt seen because it has been really tough aging as a millennial. What made you want to do that dedication?
You know, a lot of people have already, who are older have already, I mean, getting older is a blessing. It really is. A lot of us out here are not making it. So it's, you know, but I just think millennials generally have gotten a really bad rap. That has a lot to do with what I write about one way or another in all of my books. I think generationally, the narrative has been controlled by out-of-touch, goofy, bitter people who want to offset their problems on us. But, you know, people struggle with getting older naturally. We live in a really ageist society. Social media, I think, makes that worse. And again, because I do think collectively we've gotten such a short end of the stick, people tend to think that their lives are over. But I really, truly, and I have to tell myself this repeatedly, I have my own struggles, but I think, you know, every day is another opportunity to do something that you didn't do the day before. And as long as you're still here, you should, you can't be surprised by what could actually still happen. So, and like, generally speaking, like, as I mentioned in the book, one thing I do like about LA, and when I lived here the first time and the second, but what I noticed the first time is that there are a lot of people here who are in their 40s and 50s who look great, who aren't trying to be young, but are what would be considered youthful. They live these full lives. They still, as we say, dipping and doing it. And LA has changed a little bit since then, but generally that spirit is there. Like, there's so many hot old men here, and they really do inspire me. It reminds me, like, you better go hike, just stretch and watch your back, sciatica is real. But yeah, I just think for a lot of people who are like, oh, end of the world, because I'm about to turn 40. No, I think there's a lot that can still be done. Starting with stretching, because a lot of people, what their complaints are, is like, oh, I'm getting old. But I'm like, you've been complaining about that since he was 27. You don't do nothing. And I'm not like stretch shaming, but like, no, stretch. That's why you're pulling muscles. That's why it don't work. I got to, I mean, I can stretch daily, Michael. Otherwise, you might tip over. Like, it's, so yeah, that's me also just like giving encouragement in my way to like millennials.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the reminder to stretch. It is true. Our backs be hurting all the time.
Yes.
I get it.
Oh my gosh. And if you got, well, I guess I could tell the little story of how we met, Michael. I met you stretching at the gym.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yes. Oh, I thought it was at the restaurant.
Shout out to Blink.
To Blink. We met at Blink Gym.
Yes. I saw you afterwards. Yes.
And I went up to him like a fan and I was like, I'm just a really good fan of your writing. And I just really like
you. You were amazing.
Oh my God. You gave me the biggest hug. And let me tell you all something. Michael Arsenault is shaped like the bathroom sign and the men's sign. His shoulders are boop. I mean, like the bones. Oh my God. And I was like shocked. You're so tall. And it's like you have a hairline. Like he's just so handsome in real life. I was like so nervous to come up to you. And you gave me the biggest hug. You were so nice to me. But I met you stretching.
And thank you. I'm really trying to hold on to that hairline. I'm getting that Creole man problem. So I'm like, oh, I look like my uncle. All right. I see it. It's my tone.
Oh, Lord.
So you've grown up a lot during writing these three books and, you know, while you publish them. And your genre is personal essays. And so your readers have been along with you that whole time. As a Black, learning from you as a Black gay man in America, as a Black writer navigating a very white space of publishing, and a first-generation college graduate paying off your student loans and kind of being sold like a bill of goods, as you said in your second book. But in your recent LA Times profile with Jason Parham, which was the beautiful, beautiful gown.
Thank you, Jason.
The
amazing.
Styling was
my God.
Great conversation, and the styling was so beautiful.
Oh, yeah. So good. You said you're currently in your sad boy era, and promoting this book, you're talking about grief and loss a lot. Are you finding it cathartic to talk about it? And does owning it make it any easier?
I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say it's cathartic, but I think I am at least, and I don't think it's made it easier either. I think it's just what it is. And I will say, the thing about my mom is like that, this book was initially supposed to come out a year ago when you've been reading the book. So, you know, like I lost someone to suicide. I lost a friend to brain cancer. I've lost an uncle. I lost a lot of people even before things happened. So that really did color my, it impacted me in ways that I didn't even realize until I really had to sit down and write the book. I initially wanted, the book had a different title. I wanted to end on what I thought would be a happier note, but life is what it is. So, I try to be honest about where I'm at. And while I did actually withheld trying to, I was withholding writing how sad I was until I really just let it go. But that started when literally I saw my editor about a year ago. Yeah, about a year ago, a year to the when the book came out this year. So my editor was like, I finally feel back like my old self. And then literally 10 minutes later, my mom told me she had cancer. And then 6 months later, she died. So a lot of things, I had to really rush to finish the book. It was really hard, obviously, because all I really cared about was my mom being okay. My mom is that's my favorite person. That was always like my center. So I think being in the position of having to release a book no matter what so early after grief, like, and honestly, I think it's not about me, but like Beyonce coming out on the day that album comes out is like 5 months since my mom passed, and I'm very much still sad. So I had to be honest about it, if not just to be true to my writing and my how I am, to also let people know, like, I think sometimes, like, I'm sorry, I think a lot of us during the pandemic were kind of pushing to just pretending all them people didn't die or whatever you were going through, just go back to normal. That's what it is. And a lot of people don't want to go back to that space. They don't want to talk about it. And I think that's made us an even crueler society and collective. And I find that really frustrating. I also think, generally speaking, as I'm learning, while I am very much supported, a lot of people generally throw the grieving away after a while. So it's being true to myself, but also being honest. And then setting boundaries, because I think people sometimes forget, like a lot of people just assume because I have a book coming out that I must be so happy. I'm like, no, that's not, if you don't, to think that you don't really know me, especially you don't know my mom, because my mom informed so much of my work and my point of view. I owe everything to my mom. So, yeah, but I will say one benefit is that in speaking about my pain and sadness and being honest about it, it has provided, people tell me it's provided a lot of comfort to them. And with this book in particular, I always want to make people laugh and make people think with my work, but more than anything, I also want people to feel less alone. And I think that particular sentiment there, and goal really kind of speaks to the spirit of the book and where I'm at right now. So I'm hoping I feel less, helping people feel less alone. I hope I can make them laugh and make them think, but you know, a lot of us are carrying pain, whether we're vocal about it or not. So I kind of want to let people know, like, it's not just you. And hopefully I was successful in that.
Absolutely. And I really thank you for being so vulnerable, because talking about depression, talking about grief is so uncomfortable for so many people. Like, it's so much easier to just avoid it, just sad as a self-protective mechanism. But obviously in the Black community, like, there's so much struggle, and particularly silent struggle, because of the taboos, and particularly around Black men in particular. So, I just thank you for just doing what you always do, which is being vulnerable and just being yourself and not shying away from it.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. And even what you said about the pandemic, I think it's so true that we were all, because we all had to work so hard because we got $5 from the government. We had to pretend like our jobs were important. And there were sirens going off all day long. Like, both Natasha and I were in larger cities at the time, in New York and Jersey City. And I had to sit on these like work calls and pretend like what I was doing mattered. And I heard sirens all the time.
It was insane. I was like, being in Harlem, that was such an insane time. And also, I'm glad I wrote about it, because I'm like, that was a very unique experience to be like in one of the epicenters of the, like, the like the first plague in a century. And honestly, that traveled to Houston. So it's like literally no matter where I went, the wave followed me. It was really unavoidable. But those sirens in particular was like a lot. Because we really did have to work through it. I was like doing book promo. Like the bookstores weren't open. So I was trying to do as much as I can while also understanding people's pockets were hurting. It was just a weird time.
Well, you're a culture critic, you're a journalist, and you keep a pulse on what's happening in media, politics, gender, race. And you put a lot of like words to criticisms that a lot of us have. And in your first essay in the book, Please Unblock Me, Toni Braxton was not only hilarious, but you also spoke about the challenge of being authentically you and speaking about how you feel about pop culture and facing the consequences. In the essay, it was being blocked by Toni Braxton, who you adore, and Janae Aiko, and being uncomfortable in meetings with big Hollywood names with a lot of power, who may give you deals and things like that, that may pull you out of a job that feels very demanding. Being an online culture critic is incredibly demanding because everybody thinks they can do it. And it's also you're on a time crunch, right? You're up on according to what is happening right now. How do you stay navigating toning down your criticism in order to get yourself into a place where you can sit down, relax, and make a TV show without losing your voice and alienating your main audience? Because we have that problem as well. We're having
a struggle, a challenge.
I gotta be honest. I don't know if I was honestly really comfortable in those meetings. I was just like, I hope they know I talk shit. And if not, I'm going to tell them because I've already seen people get embarrassed. And also I just, as I put in the meeting, like when I remember Kevin Hart's people, I was like, this is a lovely ass meeting, which was actually my last meeting as the play was about to start. It was weird. After that, I had to order toilet paper to my house. I was like, just so y'all, this is a lovely meeting, but just so y'all know, I'm not a fake ass bitch. I talked about Kevin. And in that instance, like, because the thing is, honestly, criticism is a dying art. Media is collapsing. I mean, so is TV now, but I mean, it's still, if you can get the check, it pays better. And while I always will have a voice and point of view, you do. I don't know if compromise is the best word, but you have to be aware of the fact that you, as I mentioned.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
I was told, like, you're going to be in rooms with these people. You need to be mindful what you say. I think more than anything, I've learned to be very particular about, yes, you have to be some extent, be mindful of your criticism, but I will say if you feel really strongly and passionately about a particular topic or what someone did, I would encourage you to say it, but it's just if you find yourself in a situation where, unfortunately, like these people that I write about, they could have changed, well, they did change my life to some degree already, but to be in these rooms and to get this opportunity to really basically get my other leg off the hood, but then having to be like, tell them like, you know, I talked about you. That could have went either way, to be honest. And most people, particularly, I will say black celebrities are more sensitive than others because I think a lot of the black press outlets that still even exist coddle them because they want access. And that has, like I've stood by things I've said. I've had sites delete my stuff because they don't want to offend the person. And so I got it, but I didn't want to necessarily move in that way. So I try to be transparent. But I think for me, what has changed is where I do my criticism. Because I don't think social media in particular is helpful. I think that actually creates more problems than not. If you're just going to be critic and whatever, sure. But if you do have other ambitions, and again, you have to work with other people, maybe people you don't completely align with, but you align with the creative, it's all these different things. Mm-hmm. That becomes a challenge. But honestly, I really want to change a lot of the work I do anyway. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like me, I will always have opinions, but I think the mediums in which I express them should change. I would rather probably mm-hmm. be doing it on a podcast than Twitter or even TikTok okay. and Instagram, mm-hmm. just because I think it's so easy to be taken out of context. It's so yes. easy yes. to, like, people are wired to argue and be for the sake of nothing. Yes. People just want to dunk you for no reason. Then mm-hmm. another place will pick it up and take it into something else. I think even for me, even before I met with, like, Daniels and Kevin's folk, Hearts people and all that, mm-hmm. I noticed, and it's a good thing, I think, that people value your opinion, but when I noticed my tweets were put into articles, and then mm-hmm. okay. sometimes mm-hmm. being twisted, mm-hmm. that when I was like, ooh, I'm no longer in control of what I'm trying to say, and the context yeah. is being shifted to other people, which is creating more problems than it need to. Right. So I need to be more particular about where I speak my mind and how.
Okay.
And yeah, sometimes you do have to watch what you say. And I do think that's an individual choice. People who want to say whatever it is they want, and if they feel about it, if you feel that strongly about something, do what you do and how you want to do it. I would not discourage that. Mm-hmm. But for me, realistically, I don't have to say every thought in my mind on social. Mm-hmm. In certain political issues now, I can call directly to them people and complain. I can give money. Mm-hmm. And or I can write somewhere where I'm in control of exactly how I want to say it. So mm-hmm. if you don't like it, if you're mad, you're mad, but you can't tweak it. But I really do think, because mm-hmm. I'm probably more, it's a thoughtful question. I think when I, even before the celebrity aspect, because I got the warning and true enough, baby was right. Mm-hmm. But I think it was when my tweet started being picked up and I was yeah. like, oh, I don't like yeah. that. Because it mm-hmm. did actually, I'm trying to remember because I got a Greek brain, but it did, some of the stuff that was being twisted in certain places created more problems. And also mm-hmm. when like overly like racist people get your info, they look mm-hmm. for your fam, like all that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to deal yeah. with a barb. It could be anything like that.
Yeah. Right.
I just,
right.
it's those things. So
yeah.
it's a fine line that I'm still kind of navigating. But ultimately, if I feel really strongly about something, I'm going to say it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to work with me, I'll tell you, I talked about you. But mm-hmm. I do think a lot of people online will gas you up and say whatever you want. I'm like, them people are not going to put any money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure mm-hmm. it will mm-hmm. boost yep. you up. And then when they set you on fire, because also a lot of people kind of crave attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I also right. I don't know. I also, yeah, I hope I answered it. But yeah, just generally mm-hmm. speaking, I hate yeah. social media in general, and I realized it wasn't like the best format for me. Mm-hmm. So I had to move away. But mm-hmm. I will say at least, and I try to always still operate with integrity, but I am more selective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how you said it basically just has to be worth it for you to say yeah. something. Mm-hmm. Essentially, and I so agree with what you say about social, because characters are limited, because people's attention spans are so short, because mm-hmm. people don't no longer really look for credibility, for better and for worse, I think, on social. I think at some points credibility has such a high barrier to entry that's why social media was so great, is because some people who didn't have that accessibility could still succeed. But I think, like, for instance, for us, for Natasha and I, it's hard for us to navigate these waters, especially as we get older. I have been very critical about the second runner-up on The Bachelor this season. Natasha was very critical about one of the members of the Love is Blind cast this season. And people were in our comments, like, arguing. People were rating our podcast and rating it badly because we didn't like somebody. And it's really difficult to see our audience want us to be so angry about something. Mm. And that's hard for me.
Yeah, and it's like we all are basically having to navigate problems of our creation, because mm-hmm. generally speaking, right. I just think people are angrier and they don't have ways, they're not channeling it the best way, and literally the algorithm has
yes.
convinced people like this is how you get this it, because it. All yeah. they care about is just like how as much as time people spend on the app, so they wire you up.
Right,
that is
right.
crazy how retaliatory people can be. But I'm not surprised mm-hmm. because actually I've heard other podcasts that tell me that.
Yeah,
that's a tough spot to be in, because yeah. I mean, you should still hate some people though.
and I think
hate who you hate. That's not fair.
Right. And we've garnered, you know, to some extent, you know, success and listeners because of our unfilteredness. I would say same for you, Michael. Like, people love your raw, vulnerable criticism. It speaks to them. But then when it starts to turn on you, and then people are like only coming for you for that negativity, or or, you know, it just, it feels weird. And it's like, how do we balance, you know, staying true to us and also not alienating people who love us for that, but also not alienating opportunities that we don't yet know about yet.
So, yeah.
It's tough. Yeah. Speaking of social media, which you sound to have a very, very tough relationship with, which I share with you. We live in a world of Instagram. We're cutting reels and TikToks and stuff all day. And part of me is like, I hate this. Storytelling on TikTok is like a new medium now, right? Particularly for storytellers. I have a lot of Black creators who are demonstrating their creativity, their voice. I'm happy for them. What do you make of TikTok as a storytelling tool, particularly being a journalist and the lack of credibility that people have now of just being quote unquote TikTok journalists?
On a grand scheme of things, ultimately I will, you know, so like the same way Twitter helped me find more people, and as even as a micro blogging tool, because I'm of the blogging era originally, it helps you kind of find your voice, reach people, and get your point of view across. And I think with respect to TikTok, it opens up a new form, because I didn't watch all that thing, but I read the clip notes. I get homegirls struggle. You know, that's amazing, and it helps people who didn't even know gifts they had reach people, because ultimately, like, if you can captivate that many people to watch you talk about your life, there is a talent there and a skill, and it can be develop into something. But fundamentally, which I guess is my mess up my pockets, but we'll see. A lot of tech companies by design are blowing up traditional money models, or what we know as money models, to kind of just take over the market, and they're paying people less. So while it's giving people opportunities that they otherwise wouldn't have get, it is accelerating the devalue of art. And then when you couple that with the decline of public education, American literacy rates collapsing, and people just generally speaking becoming dumber by the second by the time, that again gives more these tech companies who have more money than anything more control. And that is terrifying, but it is also not of their, I mean, some of this is of their creation, but essentially all they did was swoop in, kind of just pull up. I mean, it ain't a fast one. It's like they suckered in these people who are willing to be suckers, and now everybody else has to deal with it. But I don't blame them completely, but I do think, I worry about the devaluing of storytelling and art in general, because songwriters and artists and songwriters are getting less money. Same for producers. Yes. Yeah. Actors are getting less money, TV writers, we're getting less shows. So people still want the art, but the medium, we're not, you know, we don't have an arts fund like Britain, or at least they got, at least, I mean, they need more money, but at least they got the BBC and they got this model that works. We don't have that. So I do worry about it on that aspect. But, you know, I get TikTok. It took me a while to join. I didn't look at it until last year because I was like, I don't want to give the CCP my info, but I was like, they probably already got it.
Yeah, they have it already. Yeah.
Yeah. But now when I look at it, it's just QVC. And it's like, oh, I mean, really? Like, I guess I'm in the old demo. Like, it's just older people on there now. So it's like, we've already kind of, I mean, it'll still be a thing, but it's like dried up in terms of like innovative. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, that's interesting what you said about television and actors getting less money. I don't know if you've noticed with MTV and Nickelodeon, both have shows that just run 24/7. MTV has pretty much only Ridiculousness.
I was going to say it's Ridiculous Network, Ridiculousness,
24/7. And then Nickelodeon is SpongeBob.
Yes, and some of that is their fault. I'm like,
Music licensing,
you should have had foresight to know how stuff works. Like, you built your own model, so now you can't even air your own IP.
And then, you
want me to watch it on Paramount Plus, which I got my subscription back because I want to watch these new shows, but then you don't have all the shows on there because then you don't want to pay the people because you broke, but... Then you let these tech people goop you into thinking you shouldn't have this shit on cable just to begin with. So it's all like annoying.
Yeah.
So it's like they're burying themselves, but we all got to suffer for it because it'll make things less interesting.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's why I defend social media to some aspects, and especially like the YouTube and TikTok and video mediums, because a lot of these creatives should have been paid by these larger networks.
They should have. And YouTube does put money in people's pockets, people are on it. So in that regard, yes, but I really, honestly, YouTube is the only one where people are like so happy about the money they get. When all the other ones still got it. Maybe Twitter don't have money, but that's their fault too. Well, Elon, and he got money. He can fund the thing.
Exactly. He got the money. Yeah.
He's his own rich nation.
Right. Own GDP.
I just blocked him today.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I was like, is not a smart man. That's just an apartheid heir who lucked up like most of them. But whatever. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Oh my gosh.
Oh God.
Don't sue me, Elon. I'm not on women. Not
Michael, you talked a lot about how media is on like its downturn. I think we talked too a lot about how thin culture is getting.
Yes.
Because so many people have access to so many different stories and so many different languages, right? We even heard, you didn't watch anything from Love is Blind, right?
No, I only saw the first year when the dude Carlton was acting like no shade, he was in Atlanta, like the girls knew, so I don't but because so many people in my life now talk about this show, I think I might take a minute soon to see what y'all talking about.
It's fun. It's a good time. But on the reunion, a straight white man from North Carolina said that he was like had piping hot tea or something. What the fuck did Jimmy say?
Actually
really
he
wild.
He was using this language that I was like, you don't know anyone who speaks this way. And it's very obvious from the way that you are saying this sentence. I can't even remember what he said. Like, that's how
Well, this is the problem with tech and also private equity. Yeah. They've gutted all media, so encourage people not reading. And technically, it's brought us all closer together, but it's actually made us more divided. And then things are increasingly becoming homogenous.
Couple that
with stupid that you'll have a straight white, because as soon as you said straight white man from North Carolina, it's like nothing's finna good finna come out of my mouth. You have that where he's like, and it helps accelerate theft, like literally as I'm talking to y'all, I see trial experimental AI features get help writing. I found out there was an Atlantic article about 170,000 books that were used to train all these AI models from all these very rich tech companies. My first book was included in that. And people was like, congratulations. I was like, y'all don't read because that's copyright infringement.
Exactly. Right.
They're trying to replace me with me.
Yeah. Wow. Right.
So that just depressed me about the popping hot tea.
He don't know
what he's talking about.
He has no idea. It's very obvious. He has no clue, but you mentioned starting a podcast. I would absolutely live. I would listen in and tune in every single week. What form of media besides books and articles and writing do you want to explore to try and help media and help culture?
Hell, I want to help me and my folks, but
I
mean, podcasting is not for lack of trying. It just hasn't worked out in the last couple years for reasons beyond my control, but there are newer opportunities that I am going to explore because I didn't grow up wanting to be a writer. I wanted to be a talk show host, but I wanted to write books.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah, so I never wanted to be like a full-time writer and write articles. Yeah. Like, get me out the media ghetto, respectfully. Yeah, they blew that model up and I shouldn't have to suffer anymore. I've honestly, both my first two books, I've been in TV development, which I've described as life sucking a lot of the times, but I gotta stop that. But it is, but it can be helpful.
It's so long. Yeah.
Yes, it
seems
it
like the timeline just is endless.
Yeah, I've been in TV. I've actually been both my books have been options literally since maybe the couple of weeks after my first book. So my first situation with I Can't Date Jesus didn't work out. Actually, the plague had a lot to do with that. Okay. But honestly, that worked out how it was supposed to, because this is me being political now to the point about your question. based on the moves of certain people and upcoming projects, I would say my vision didn't align with theirs, so it worked out how it was supposed to.
Good.
My first book is actually at the place I always wanted it to be, and I'm back to work on it because I signed a deal for like a year ago before the strike happened. So I'm back to working on it, and I actually have found somebody to work with who I really, really like. Not that I wasn't expecting to like love the person so much, but I'll just say like I really tried to keep it, you know, sameness if you're between the lines. But I try, and Lord knows I try. I love my people, but you know, I tried. So this, I'm actually still really excited though, because hopefully I can make my amazing country black Houston show that really shines a light on a lot of stuff that I think happens. I want to be in TV and podcasting. Sorry to cut you off, but I TV podcasting and more books.
Okay. Awesome. I think Beyonce's album Pushing the Country Houston Narrative is going to help you out a lot. I love that you signed this deal a while ago. So I think she's going to just keep helping you, despite the fact that you didn't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a prime moment. Yeah.
Does this person's name rhyme with Fisha Frey that you're working with, maybe?
Oh, no, I love her. No, it's not her. Damn. I love her, though. But no, I love her.
Frey Fedia? Okay.
She's been very supportive of my books and writing.
Yes, I know,
We love Issa.
Yes.
Yeah, my second book was actually, it's over now, if I can say it. It was actually at HBO Max for a while. What happened with that was... my 23 was interesting. It started with Brett Favre threatening to sue me on January 6th for an article I wrote about his scandal. He said this in my mama's house, so fuck him forever. I'll probably explore that in the book, actually. And then, then I ended up being passed because, going into 22 and 2023, they actually asked for more pages of my pilot. But long story short version, there are new owners of that place, as some people might know. And the directive changed pretty immediately. And while I did quietly survive the various layoff cycles, because usually one exec brings you in. So it's rare once that exec leaves that people still care. It's even rarer when people are like, I don't know, we don't need that DEI anymore. but I used to be like the little black that could there until finally they were we're not gonna make this here. But there still may be hope for that, actually. It's just right now with TV though, it's a very strange time. Like I read something, which normally they do like 130 pilots a year, the studios. And of that they pick what they order the series. This year they only did three. This year. Just from this year, this month. Yeah, so they only did three. So where it's normally like 190 productions or what they're going to pick through, they only did three. So nobody's really buying right now. So it's good.
Wow. Okay.
My first book settled right before all of this happened.
Okay.
But as we navigate whatever is happening, that's the kind of caveat. Like, it's a weird time.
Weird
landscape. Again, they feel for the tech okie doke. But maybe one of them tech people will give me some money for a TV show. So again, let me shut up.
Oh, man. Well, that's exciting.
That is exciting.
Well, obviously, it's a long slog,
so lift me in prayer.
Yes. We will. We'll be here watching and waiting.
If you need an official recap podcast, we got you. We are here.
Do. I don't want to jump ahead, but you'll definitely keep that in mind. Yes. We can get you a check.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Michael, so much for joining us. This was so fun. Thank you for indulging us in this conversation. And we're just happy to have you in our space and introduce you to hopefully some new people that are listening.
I'm very happy to be here and y'all popping. So I'm happy to be on the show.
Awesome.
I'm glad y'all read the book and are liking it. It means a lot. And again, thank you for being so, so, so kind. You're making like a weird time for me a lot easier. So I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Everybody, we'll be back next week. Rate, review, subscribe, follow Michael. Where can they follow you? Where can they find you? What do you want to shout out at the end?
Even though the name no longer applies soon, Young, spelt the normal way, S-I-N-I-C-K, that's Young Cynic. Mm-hmm. That's me on Instagram and the other ones. TikTok is, I think, is, I forgot what I changed it to, but I don't do none of that, so don't look for it.
I was about to say, you're on yes. there? I'm gonna look
you I just okay. I just look at just to watch
okay.
random people pop dance to Sexy Red, and
it
shows me food and all that, yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. Find Michael on all the places, buy the book, yep. and we'll be back next week, guys.
Sure will. Bye, guys.
Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.